Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast in which two films with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. On this episode, in the red corner, wearing rollerblades and a smirk, it's 1995's Hackers.
Dave?
Yeah, Ma?
What are you doing?
I'm taking over a TV network.
I'll finish up, honey, and get to sleep.
Hackers.
And in the blue corner, looking nervous and confused, it's another visitor from 1995, The Net.
Sandra Bullock is caught in the net.
So what is the connection between these two movies and which will be victorious? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Big introduction. Welcome to Clash of the Titles. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Chris Tilley.
And as you just heard, the two films going head to head on this week's show are Hackers and The Net. They were chosen by our very own Vicky Crompton. So, Vicky, tell us what connects these two movies.
I have chosen movies where the internet looks old.
Woo! I'd figured it out.
Oh, had you?
I mean, so had I.
So, to explain.
Yeah.
Both of these films are from a time that I would say most of us didn't know what the internet was or how to use it properly. As an example, would you tell me what your first email address was, please?
Oh, that takes me back.
Was that
I think...
I got it.
Pass me my slippers. That takes me back.
What was yours, Vicky?
So mine was because of South Park, and which I can't even remember the episode of South Park that kicked it all off, but I thought this was hilarious, and it was crackwhore@hotmail.com.
Oh, no.
I know, it's really awful. It's absolutely dreadful. It's dreadful. So
but you got the first crack whore.
I did, actually. I hadn't thought of it like that. Good for me.
Well done.
Yeah, I should have sold it on, if you can do that.
It's weird how no one else had picked crack whore, that you just got crack whore, not crack whore 1979.
Yeah, it's strange,
can I call
it?
You that for the rest of this show?
No, don't ever. Okay. Don't ever mention it ever again.
You dreadful. Brought it up.
So, Vicky gave us two films. You got The Net, I got Hackers. We're doing it chronologically, even though they both came out in 1995. Hackers came out after The Net. Chris?
Today, I'm talking about 1995's The Net, a techno thriller that's basically Norton's antivirus software, the movie. Sandra Bullock plays an isolated cybersecurity specialist whose identity is wiped from the world when she uncovers a vast conspiracy. The film building towards a nail-biting finale at the most exciting location imaginable, a computer trade show.
Computer analyst Angela Bennett was just doing her job when she stumbled onto something
What is this?
She never should have seen.
Someone's tapped
into the system.
How long will it take to track her?
So, further to your question, Vicky, I was going to ask you guys when you first used the internet, because Erwin Winkler, the guy who directed this, a famous Hollywood producer, found it really tricky to get financing for it. He basically, whoever he went to, he had to explain the internet to them. people at the studios did not know, but he was really intrigued by it as a concept and got hold of these screenwriters, Michael Ferris and John Brancato, because he liked the script they wrote for the game.
I love that film so much.
That is a great movie.
I love that.
Should we talk about that instead?
It's massively underrated, though, the game. Yeah. It's like, it's sort of, because David Fincher had done Seven and everyone was like, what's next? And he did the game and people went, meh. And I'm like, wrong.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant.
But has similarities with this script in that it's, you know, it's a sort of tense, paranoid thriller. But this started out as a very different beast. He called those guys in to meet with them and told them he wanted to make a movie about resume tampering.
What?
He'd read an article about people in Japan changing their CVs to make themselves seem more valuable. And so asked these guys to write a script about someone trying to get a job in advertising who changes their resume.
Wow.
And they said no. And so through their discussions, Winkler eventually asked them to write a dark paranoid thriller in the vein of The Parallax View or 3 Days of the Condor. Mm. And he also wanted to make a film about a woman in jeopardy who manages to save herself without the help of a man, doing this on her own terms with her own skills and knowledge, which to a degree does happen in this film.
Well, R.I.P. Cyberbob.
But so they went away and wrote a very dark paranoid thriller, which I will get to much later, because as the movie developed and when Sandra Bullock came on board, it changed dramatically from what they wrote to a slightly more generic thriller in the vein of what people were watching at the time. And at that period, there were a lot of these paranoid thrillers. You had Enemy of the State, Disclosure, techno thriller Sliver, Sneakers, Conspiracy Theory.
But did any of those have a website called pizza.net?
Oh my God, I was thinking about this because I'd said this to you. You remember I said to you about the net ages ago? In my memory, I've seen the net, I would definitely double figures. I have a memory, clear as day, of a dot matrix screen of Sandra Bullock ordering the pizza and it showing the pizza being cooked with like dot matrix style cooking. And I thought that was incredible. And it's not in the film.
It's not in the film. Because you said that when we were discussing this, going, oh, there's this bit. Yeah, and I watched it and I went, have I got the wrong cut of this movie?
It's a false memory.
But it's funnily enough, I mean, I don't remember that because it didn't happen. But that was all I remember. I watched it in 95 as well and haven't seen it since. All I remembered was her ordering the pizza online because that was a big deal, wasn't it? And I'm sure they put it in the trailers.
Yeah, because she hasn't even got a mobile phone. So there's close-ups of her ordering a pizza, doing her seat reservations on an aeroplane, because that was action enough. Because it was unheard of.
Well, let's include in that she's playing Wolfenstein 3D on her computer. Then she orders the pizza, which, by the way, sounds like the most god-awful pizza in the world. She goes for anchovies, garlic and extra cheese. Because up until that point, I'm like, cool.
You're such a babe.
20 inches with a regular crust.
Is that right?
It's funny that we both made that note.
I was interested. I wanted to know. I was fascinated. Pizza's a big deal.
Is it?
It is.
Do you want to know something sad?
Yeah.
Pizza.net no longer exists.
I tried it myself. I was like, I wonder.
It's a broken link. That's quite a useful website to have, though, isn't it? That email address. If you're a pizza company,
The bit that loses me at the start, though, because I'm with her playing Wolfenstein. I'm actually with her with a ridiculous pizza choice. The bit which loses it for me is where she turns on a monitor with a video of a fire.
Oh yeah,
on
it.
Like in her fireplace, she's got a video. I'm like, I get the fact she prefers computers to people.
Yeah.
But does she prefer computers to fire?
They were real. Sorry, I used to work at the gadget shop. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And we used to sell a shit ton of DVDs of crackling fire.
That's different, because that's actually a video of a fire.
It's the same thing.
It looks like an 8-bit, it looks like Jet Set Willy, but a fire.
So let's talk about who this is. This is Sandra Bullock playing Angela Bennett, who, as you say, is a kind of lonely individual. She doesn't really leave the house.
Yeah.
She's living her life through the net, as it were, which, funny enough, is something that really does happen now.
She does meet people, though, because she's got friends. She's got the friend who's Cyber Bob, and she's got a friend called Iceman, and she talks to them. And for some reason, their voices come out of the computer and they're utterly terrifying. Now, I don't think people actually did that in 1995, because Cyberbob's voice is, no one has sex anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And then Iceman is like, I'm there, babe, which means that it's not a standardised speaker. They've chosen those voices, or she's chosen those voices for them, which is really, really weird.
Yeah. Did you notice in the chat room, I was looking at some of the chat that they were having, and one of the comments from is the net is today's ultimate condom or something. Which I didn't, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what does that mean?
Nope, missed that bit as well. Was that around the same time where there was a Dot Matrix pizza cooking?
So she, we'll call her Sandra for the purposes of this.
Yeah,
please
sure.
do.
Because it's easier.
You love hearing that name.
I can't get on.
So she works as kind of a beta tester. She goes into people's computer systems, find their faults, fixes them. And as you say, she's playing and fixing Wolfenstein 3D at the start of the movie. And so we get a bit of a sense of her and her life. And I did have one question. She doesn't leave the house. She eats pizzas and she drinks martinis all day. Why is she not larger? Why does she look like Sandra Bullock?
She doesn't eat all the pizza, so.
No.
There's like over half of it left.
And she only has, in fact, I think you've been pretty judgy here, Chris Tilley. I think she actually has one martini in that scene after she's done all her work and she's going on vacation tomorrow morning.
And she listens to Mozart's Ghost while she's drinking that martini.
Well, that's the disc.
That's the disc.
I just want to talk about this. So she gets a disc delivered by FedEx from her friend, which is Mozart's Ghost, which makes a huge plot point in the movie. Is it possible? Because it's always bothered me when the FedEx guy turns up and delivers it. She goes, actually, I've got something to send as well. I don't think you can do that with FedEx. if someone from FedEx delivers something, can you then go, oh, brilliant. Well, while you're here, does that work?
I don't know. Do you care?
Right, well, we'll leave that one hanging.
Yeah,
but
because no one cares. So let's put a pin in that.
I don't know if you don't care. I just think you don't know, and so you're a bit upset.
That's true, actually.
With yourselves. Yeah.
It's just my go-to defence mechanism.
Yeah.
So then the plot kicks in, and I'm really not sure how much I care about the plot or how interesting it is to explain what is going on. She gets the floppy disk. It's got this dodgy Pi sign on it that if you click, it permits you access to a computer security system.
Well, what you have to do is you have to click on it and press Control Shift.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because it's high tech. Mm-hmm. But actually, when he goes, she's talking to Dale on the phone, the guy who sent this. He goes, click on it and press Control Shift. And she presses Control Shift and clicks on it, which is not what Dale said. So. I'm just saying, you know, if you're going to make a movie about the internet and hacking and computers, you know, you
do
need to get it right, okay?
And ultimately, what the villain's scheme is, what this is all leading to, is they, the Praetorians...
Wait, you don't know?
The Praetorians, they sabotage organisations' computer systems. Those organisations then have to buy this gatekeeper programme to protect themselves, but Gatekeeper is the villain because it lets them have unlimited access to those computer systems.
Yeah, it's the Trojan horse.
Because that's the plot, but the meat and potatoes of it is her, them trying to kill her and them wiping her identity and them actually forcing her to find all this out about them. I don't think she'd be finding out all this information if they weren't after her.
They kind of
push her into it, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So anyway, that all kicks off when she goes on holiday to Mexico and sitting on the beach.
I love him.
And she meets Devlin.
Jack Devlin, played by Jeremy Northam. Oh my God, he's the best. They meet and he's got a laptop in his bag. So he's a bad guy. Let's establish that. He's a bad guy. He's a hitman. He's out to kill her, but he's trying to win her trust by saying he's a hacker too. Now, I bring this up for one really important point because he goes, oh, look at us, this beautiful beach in the world. And all we can think about is, and she finishes his sentence and goes, where can I hook up my modem?
Right. She says it wrong.
She doesn't say modem.
So she works in computers and she's bad at computers. And he's a hitman who's a very bad hitman. Which we will get into as it goes along.
But we need to say it now. He is the worst hitman in cinema history. He shoots and kills three people in this movie, all of which work for him in some capacity.
That's absolutely true. So I believe they call this a meet cute, don't they? And
they do.
Vicky, I'd like to get your analysis of his chat up.
Oh
lines.
My God. So you know how much I love Sandra Bullock. However, Jeremy Northam's, the thing is, like, I'm going to reveal a bit about myself and that's going to make you want to shag me. And it's, I think I'm the cat at Breakfast at Tiffany's. And she's like, oh, God, you're just so vulnerable and I'm definitely going to shag you. I'd be like, no.
He doesn't just that. He claims to be the cat and then he starts singing Moon River. And that's the moment she falls for him.
Right. So this is, like, he knows all this stuff. He pretends to be Mr. Perfect to her because he's been spying on her.
Yes.
In the chat room.
Well, I can help you with that because I listened to a commentary of this with the screenwriters and they, although they said they didn't have anything to do with this Breakfast at Tiffany's shit.
Yes.
That was not in their script. They did say that there was a scene where she rents Breakfast at Tiffany's that was cut from the film. So this would make a lot more sense if we had that. She immediately falls in love with Devlin.
Yes.
Not only does he pretend to be a cat and sing Moon River, he also puts his handkerchief around her midriff.
I know, doesn't she look amazing?
What, like, is that bit, by the way?
Because he's got a big jacket on and right. They're walking on the beach and it's cold and he says, oh, you must be cold. Mm. And she thinks, and you think, that he's going to take his jacket off, the chivalrous move, and he ties a napkin around her stomach instead to make her laugh.
Would you like a second piece of trivia that can explain this?
Oh, yeah. What, did he love his jacket so much he didn't want to share it?
Well, there's obviously a lot of Hitchcock in this film. I mean, it's like a remake.
If you say that, I believe you, but I don't know.
In Notorious, Cary Grant plays a character called Devlin who puts his handkerchief around a woman's midriff that he's falling in love with.
Okay.
But it worked for Cary Grant. Here, it's this weird nod to another film that actually looks stupid in this film.
Well, I mean, does it look stupid in a film where a guy goes, you're the midget Houdini to someone at one point? That guy who steals the person and he goes, it's not here. The guy goes, I steal it like you ask. And he goes, yeah, you're a veritable midget Houdini.
Yeah, and then kills him.
Yeah.
I felt
that's
bad
one kill. One good. That's
there
his first
quite
kill.
A high body count. Like, poor old Alan.
All he had to do was give that guy $20 and that guy would have just gone away.
Or just shoot her. I don't understand. He was going to kill her anyway. I mean, I'm not advocating for that, but he was going to kill her anyway by pushing her overboard his massive boat.
No, he wasn't ever going to push her overboard. He was going to shoot her. But then she finds the gun and he tells worst hitman lie ever, where she's like, tell me about this gun that I found. And he goes, it's for shark fishing.
Yeah, I like that bit.
Shark fishing. You stand on a boat shooting at shark.
Instead of shooting her, he shags her.
He does. And that's his best bit of acting, is after they've had sex on the boat and she can't see him and she's like, oh, and then my mum is really ill, and she's like opening up and he looks so unbelievably bored, like bored beyond all tolerance. Like someone should yell cut and he's like, oh, I'm really uncomfortable, whatever. He just looks so crushingly bored. And she's going, oh, I'm going on a bit or whatever, I'm really sorry. And he's like, yeah, you are a bit.
No, he actually then goes, let's get a drink. Yeah. Immediately she's like, oh, I'm just a bit nervous, so I keep talking and babbling. He's like, I'm going to make a drink. Do you want one?
So he shags her and then tries to shoot her.
Can we say make love? Let's keep it classy.
She jumps into bed with him very quickly for
no,
someone
who she's literally been convinced that he is Mr. Perfect through his conniving Machiavellian ways.
And she spent all day with him.
Wow, Vicky.
I don't know what to say. She's on holiday. What?
Well, Cecilia, who reviewed the film on Amazon, didn't like that bit either.
Well, Cecilia's probably...
She said, I loved the movie, except I kept wondering why the leading lady, who is so shy that no one at the company she works for has seen her, neither do any of her neighbours, yet on her first date with the handsome villain, she isn't too shy to go to bed with him.
It doesn't make...
For this, I kept saying to myself, give me a break.
Oh, Cecilia.
Cecilia.
You're breaking my heart.
Oh, very good.
Right, back to the plot.
Yep, sorry.
So he tries to shoot her, and that's when the plot kicks into gear now, because it's Sandra on the run. It's her identity being wiped.
Yeah.
And
she becomes Ruth Marks.
Yes.
She becomes Ruth Marks. So explain that, Alex.
Well, she goes to the consulate, as you would do if you had your passport stolen and everything. And they're like, OK, we can give you a visa, Ruth Marks. And she's like, I'm not Ruth Marks. And they're like, what? Yeah, this is your fit photo because they changed all her records. You're Ruth Marks. And she goes, if I say I'm Ruth Marks, do I get back to the US? And they go, yeah, which already is a really suspicious thing to be asking an embassy member of staff. Yeah. And they go, yeah, just say you're Ruth Marks, sign here. And so she does, which sets the whole thing in motion. Now, just on a personal note, I lost my passport in New York once and had to go to the UK consulate there. And it's so stressful and it took so long. If they'd said to me,
you're Ruth Marks
and you can go home, I would have gone, yes,
definitely.
I'm Ruth Marks.
And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say from here on in. I feel like it becomes quite a by-the-numbers thriller from this point onwards that we saw a lot of in the 1990s.
Do you not think the reconnection with her ex was really well done? So she reconnects with her ex,
Dennis
Alan.
Miller.
Yeah.
And the point of the film is, I think, the point of Alan's character, like he's these certain things. So choices have been made. So he was married when they were together, and he was her therapist. So two character arisations that would lead you to think that Alan might turn on her or sell her down the river, down the moon river, et cetera, et cetera. So he was married, so she could turn up at his house, and his wife might still be there, and he will deny knowing her. Or he was her therapist, and so someone at some point could say, you're an unreliable whoever because you used to use the services of a therapist. But he's not. They just reconnect in, and they're going to be happy, and then he gets killed.
Yeah, well, hang on a sec. Let's rewind, because he's an educated man. He's a therapist, a psychiatrist, no less. And yet, I think the reason that they fell for each other in the first place is because she calls modem and modem. And there's a scene in which he's like, why are you freaking out? Someone just stole your purse. He says stole.
Does he?
Yeah, not stolen.
Did they know they could do more than one take on this film? I mean, I think he's one of the best things in the film, Dennis Miller, even though he's not known for his acting.
He's great. I think
the film kicks into gear a little bit when he's on screen.
Although, I don't know whether you're going to agree, she is so out of his league, right?
What?
Sandra Bullock is like here, and my hand is very high. Dennis Miller is here, my hand's slightly lower.
She is out of it. I'm just thinking of, is that the way around you say it?
Yes.
Yes. She's out of his league. Yes. Agreed. Yes, sorry. Sorry, I'm just thinking.
But I guess the quality of this film depends on whether you kind of buy into the fact that she literally can't prove she's who she says she is.
Yeah, but you would buy into it in the mid-90s. It's just the one obsession, and this comes up again in Hackers, which we'll get to, but basically the internet is used to change your police record, and then that's it. Like, you're screwed.
I will say this, because it's Jack Devlin, Jeremy Northam's character, who changes her police record with incredible ease from the computer
in his car.
He changes it. And so that's why he puts in that she's had drug issues. She's wanted for prostitution. You're like, yeah, like being a bit of a dick.
You're being a bit of a dick.
Yeah, yeah, you're being a bit of a dick here. Later on, when you see the record again, it says venereal disease.
It does, yeah.
Which makes you think that in his downtime, when he can't find her, he's just going, duh, 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 fuck it, have venereal disease.
Yeah,
as
it
well.
Says seeks treatment for venereal disease. Would that sort of information be on anyone's police record? Do you know what I mean?
So from here on in, it's a lot of her being chased or her sitting at a computer typing.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy either of those aspects of the film?
I enjoyed the fact that the stunts were very tiny. So when she crashes the boat, when she's escaping from Jeremy Northam and she's in a dinghy, she just sort of paddles into a rock and then it flips and she's knocked
flies
out.
Flies through the air.
Yeah, she's knocked out for 3 days. And there's a bit where he's chasing after it and he will shoot to kill like he's a baddie. And she just does a tiny jump off a bridge. And he's like, oh, fuck it, I can't do that. Like, there's no way that I can go after her. And then, obviously, there's a chase scene in a carousel, which is not very exciting.
Because he, for some reason, doesn't just go and find her and kill her.
No.
He hides in a photo
booth.
And points just the barrel of his gun out of the curtain, so he can't actually see what he's shooting at. And just fires a couple of times.
It is flawed.
Again, Jack Devlin is the worst hitman in cinema history, and also dresses like a Next catalogue model throughout the movie. Yeah, he loves a roll neck.
To be fair, Tim, he's just dressing 95, isn't he? The reason I ask about the computer scenes is that the producer claims that in test screenings, audiences like the scenes with her tapping a computer so much, they put more in.
I agree.
And every time they put more in, people wanted more.
Yeah, that's good. And a progress bar. I love a progress bar in films.
And then can we talk about the finale? Because
only if we talk about the build-up to the finale, because the Joker in the pack, you do not count on evil Angela Bennett. Evil Angela Bennett is the best thing in this movie.
Yeah, she's great.
She's such a bitch. But for real, she's meant to be. Her character is that. But like, no matter who they are, like when her boss is like, it's a fire alarm, you have to go, she's like, ugh, idiot.
Did you notice that when the fire alarm and everyone's waiting on the street, so evil Angela Bennett's on the street and good Angela Bennett is hacking into the mainframe upstairs. So they are delayed going back into the building by a protest march.
Yep.
Did you notice what the protest march was about?
For AIDS.
No.
Yeah, which I thought was a brilliant callback. Yeah, it was a treatment as a right protest march.
Which goes back to the Secretary of Defence.
Secretary of State.
Who we didn't mention. So the film opens with
Secretary of State.
Undersecretary of Defence.
Right, told you.
Getting the news over the phone.
Yeah, that you don't know what it is, though.
Yes, but we find out later that he has AIDS and he shoots himself.
Well, if we're going to do it properly. He goes to the park, speaks to his son and his wife
the
phone.
Yeah.
Eats a pear.
I thought it was an apple, it's but nonetheless.
I double checked. I rewound a couple of times.
Can I do a quick sidebar on that opening? You know, he's in front of like a sculpture
of a
man emerging from the ground.
Yeah.
That's called The Awakening. Now, in about 1995, I went on a school trip to Washington and I saw that.
What kind of school?
It was a politics thing. And it was
That's not my question.
Not an answer either.
We went to Alton Towers, is all I'm saying. So, and that was a big treat.
I went to Beamish.
Sorry, I've been there. But you went to DC. Cool.
I went to DC and I saw that sculpture and I came back to school and in art class, I copied it and passed it off as my own and I got a really good mark for it. I did a really shit version of it.
So,
anyway.
Evil Angela.
Okay, we're back on her.
Well, no, I just want to say, because we've established that, first of all, Jack Devlin is one of the worst hitmen in movie history. Evil Angela is also a hit woman of some note. She has a gun and she's out to kill Sandra Bullock.
And she actually has a go at Devlin for not killing her.
Right. Mm. However, when they're at the computer convention...
The Pan Pacific Computer Convention.
She turns to Jack Devlin and goes, let's finish the work and get the hell out of here. These people make me nervous.
Yeah.
So let me just establish, she's basically going, you know, remember when I applied for this hit woman position, the one thing I did say was I can't be employed at computer conventions because I've got a nervous disposition around nerds.
It's very weird. I mean, thematically, a computer convention's a good place for them to have the finale. But drama-wise, excitement-wise, it's a pretty dull location, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I once went to a Dungeons and Dragons convention in Nottingham and met Mr. Bronson from Grange Hill.
Ah, Star Wars fame as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Oh, was he nice?
He was lovely. Oh. Really, really nice.
Because I would have been scared because Mr. Bronson was very frightening, wasn't
he? Most terrifying character on TV as a kid.
A better villain than Jack Devlin.
And a better hitman. He actually, what was the kid's name who ends up killing himself?
Danny.
Zamo was the...
Danny's...
There's a kid called
Danny Zuko.
What?
There was a kid in Grange Hill who kills himself because of
Danny.
Danny something.
Yeah.
He kills himself in Mr. Bronson's car. So actually, Mr. Bronson from Grange Hill has a higher body count than professional hitman Jack Devlin.
But it sort of all happens quite quickly, and I found it all a little bit underwhelming in that she sends some transmission over the net, which is not a fun way to sort of have victory at the end of your film.
Well, she sends an email.
I will say my problem is the lack of Jeff Gregg. Jeff Gregg is the big bad in this.
Exactly what I was going to say. So this is Gregg Microsystems is behind it all. Gregg is the villain of the piece and we never actually spend any time with him whatsoever.
Not at all.
Would you like another bit of trivia? They offered the role of Gregg. I'm not making this up. They offered the role to Bill Gates and he said yes and then changed his mind and pulled out. But he was going to play Gregg in this.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. He went, cool, I'm in a movie. And they went, here's the script. He went, hey, fuck you guys. Yeah.
Well, speaking of the script, would you like to know what might have been? So the original script, she was agoraphobic and psychologically unstable.
Good, already
and
better.
So she starts mentally unravelling when the identity stuff happens, which I think is a much more interesting direction to go in.
I think there's a bit of that still in here. So when she's on the phone to Evil Angela the first time round, she just looks, she looks like she starts to believe it a bit. Like she looks very, very tired, like exhausted by what she's been through. And she's going, no, I'm Angela. And she's like, I think you're mistaken. I'm Evil Angela and I'm Angela. And she looks like she's going to give up and be like, oh, do you know what? I haven't got the energy to deal with this. And then has to find her reserves of strength.
And also the agoraphobia is still in it when she goes as far out to sea as possible in a boat.
Well, on
and
the director,
she loves that.
On the director's commentary, he says we absolutely nailed the agoraphobia side of her personality in this film. And the screenwriters, they completely took it out. It's not in the film. They didn't.
She's got less space around her in gravity, and she's in space.
Well, their ending was quite different. I don't know. Did you believe that Devlin was falling in love with her or not? Because I found that confusing. I didn't think it really was.
No, not in love.
So in their version, he definitely does fall in love with her. And their finale, actually, he ends up killing her replacement. He doesn't go off in the sunset with her or anything, but he does give her a life back. And Baker says to her, there's nothing you can do. No one will believe you. These guys are going to keep doing it. And so she's stuck. That's the more the sort of paranoid thriller side of it that they were going for.
And also gives the power to him, though, which wasn't the point.
Because he's
restoring her life.
And that was their ending, which was changed for thought of being too dark and you needed a happy Sandra Bullock ending. And yet none of this seems to matter because although the film cost $22 million, it made $110 million worldwide.
Yeah, it was a big hit.
It was critically mauled. Word. 38% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics, 44% from the audience.
Wow.
I'm going to end my bit of coverage with a couple of reviews I found online.
Do it.
Dwight Colruck says, in this movie, Sandra Bullock played not only a computer nerd, but a moron. It was a comedy. And Maximilian says, he gives it 2 stars and says, average.com.
I'm not listening to this.
This is the problem with the internet, is that any old idiot gets a platform.
Yeah. R.I.P. Cyber Bob. All right, that's the net. Anything else on the net? The net, the net, the net?
No.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Not.
So the movie I was given by Vicky was 1995's Hackers, in which a group of young, sexy computer wizards rollerblade round New York while trying to avoid being framed for corporate fraud by evil hacker The Plague, a.k.a. Eugene.
But this time...
Come here, look at this.
It's some kind of virus.
Unless $5 million is transferred to the following account, I will capsize 5 oil tankers. They just hacked the wrong guy.
Game's over.
Whoever wrote this needs somebody to take the fall.
Very good.
So, I'm going to just come out and say I've never seen Hackers. This was my first experience. I think I'd seen about 15 minutes of it a long, long time ago, but I've never sat down and watched Hackers. And one of the things I will say before getting into this is that is the biggest disappointment of my life. This movie, if I'd watched this when I was 15 years old, I have no doubt this would have been one of my favourite movies of my teenage years.
At uni, I lived next to a girl and this was her favourite film of all time. But I also think it's stupid because I saw it at the time and thought it was rubbish.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong, but looking at it now through the prism of cynicism, I didn't enjoy it as much as I wish I could have done. However, reading the blurb before I started watching it, when I was like, Johnny Lee Miller plays Zero Cool. I'm like, okay. And then Angelina Jolie plays Acid Burn. I was like, all right. And then I'm into it. And I'm watching it, and the police are raiding this 11-year-old's house in slow motion. Young 11-year-old Johnny Lee Miller.
Please. That's not him playing the 11-year-old.
No, I know.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, I realise they haven't de-aged Johnny Lee Miller, although he does look so much younger in this than Trainspotting, which was just a year later.
Yeah.
So he's being arrested and charged because he hacked Wall Street causing a 7-point drop in the NY stock market, mm-hmm. is what the film says. Mm. I'm an adult. I have no idea what that means and how bad that is.
I thought you were going to say, because I'm an adult, I understand the gravity of that situation.
The opposite.
The character is loosely based on a guy called Kevin Mitnick, who was a very famous hacker in America. He went to prison for years for doing hacking. But at age 12, he found a way of hacking into the Los Angeles bus system and riding around for free. That was his
first
crime.
They sent him to prison for that?
He didn't go to prison for that.
Wow.
But that was his first crime. And he did it via social engineering, which, if you're reading, as we've been reading around it, that's a lot of what hacking actually is.
Yeah, it's just ringing
people. It's phoning
people
up people and convincing them of stuff. It's not as technical as it sounds, is it? And 100%. To be fair, Hackers does a good job of showing
that. Anyway, he gets charged by the judge, who fines the parents $45,000 and then sentences him and says, you are forbidden from using a computer until the day of your 18th birthday. Basically, the judge is going, yeah, so on his 18th birthday, parents, who I've just fined $45,000, maybe get him a computer. That should be his gift.
Well, Alex, what would your sentence have been to young Zero Cool?
Well, if I'd been the dad who, when he gets fined $45,000, just sort of goes and rolls his eyes, I'd have been like, give him the chair!
We can't afford it.
But anyway, this is all just preamble. Johnny Miller is now 18 years old. We first see him hacking a TV station. And like you say, just to go into the whole purpose of hacking and the way hacking works, he does call the station and goes, hey, I'm Eddie Vedder. Funny.
Yeah, funny.
Can I get this? And the guy goes, yeah. And so he hacks it so he can watch. He changes the TV to the Outer Limits because that's what he wants to watch there and then.
Yeah. Mm.
Kids, this is the 90s before streaming. This is how you got to watch what you wanted to watch.
You had to hack a TV station.
You had to hack a TV station. And it then Acid Burn shows up. We don't know it's Angelina Jolie at this point. It's just another hacker goes, you're on my turf. They have a robot fight. You see the tapes changing robot hands.
Yeah, hacking apparently works by two mechanical robot arms going at each other.
Yeah.
I guess they're trying to find ways to bring to life hacking, but this one doesn't work. I've written Riddick down a lot watching this film, and that's the first of my Riddicks.
And their banter, him and Acid Burn, is quite good.
It's top bants.
Until the very end. Now, when she wins and she throws him off and he gets his connection terminated, he looks at the screen and he goes, shit on me.
Oh, God, he does.
Now, I just want to make it clear. I grew up in the 90s. That was never something any of us said in the 90s. You didn't go, oh, I missed my school bus. Shit on me.
Stop.
I've overdone these eggs. Shit on me.
Stop it.
All right, fine. Anyway, that's my point. My point is this film, while it sort of purports to be this window into counterculture coolness, has weird moments like that where an older filmmaker / scriptwriter has gone, that's what the kids are saying. Yeah. And you're like, no. No one's saying that!
No one ever wants to say that. No one ever wants to hear that, I don't think. I think another weird thing is his relationship with his mum. Does anyone else think that was a bit weird? Fisher Stevens as the baddie. The way he sort of gets to Johnny Lee Miller is he threatens to have Johnny Lee Miller's mum strip searched. And that's the thing that like opens. He's like, fine, I'll give you whatever it is that you need.
Mm.
Is this necessary? Like, that's not a. There are other ways of you can invent any way of finding the character's Achilles heel.
That's weird.
I don't know. We have skipped forward, but I want to mention this now, just before either of you mention it, because I am fully aware that I have the exact same hair as Fisher Stevens.
You really do
in this movie, like to the point where I'm like, did I somehow subconsciously always want to be Fisher Stevens, a.k.a. The Plague, a.k.a. Eugene, in this film?
It is unsettling.
It's ridiculous. So I think the one thing we do need to talk about, which is, again, this whole idea of like what is cool, what is counterculture, what are these people doing that really represents just how cutting edge they are? And apparently the filmmakers think, and it is 1995, so fair enough, rollerblading.
Yeah. Everyone is on wheels, literally all the time.
For the whole film.
There's a scene where Fisher Stevens is skateboarding alongside a car.
he's doing Martin McFly.
Yeah, he's a skateboarder though. That's very different because actually skateboarding is cool and he does look cool.
Do you think skateboarding's cool?
Yeah.
And you think you're an adult? Yeah. All right.
I think it's cooler than rollerblading. I will say this. So
if you are
a rollerblader and you go to the park and you keep fit through rollerblading, full respect. I'm not saying don't rollerblade. I am saying that in this movie, if you're Johnny Lee Miller and you turn up to a bar at night on a Friday night in New York on your rollerblades, that's a stupid thing to do. Because first of all...
But it's a rollerblading club.
Right. Yeah, is it a youth club? Like, because they're 18, so there can't be any booze. So isn't it just some sort of youth club?
But, you know, if you are turning up in rollerblades, at some point you're going to want to take the rollerblades off. You don't want to be in them all night.
They're
which
very
means
heavy. They're very heavy.
You've got your shoes in that rucksack he's wearing. He's got a pair of shoes. Which means that he, at all times, has a bag with him that smells of feet. Like, always, throughout this movie.
Don't you? I do.
You know, so, literally, he probably smells of feet and Lynx Africa throughout this movie. It's 95. So we've skipped a bit, because I didn't know much about this movie, as I said. I never really saw it. I fist-pumped the air, because at 15 minutes and 37 seconds, I wrote it down, we've had touch-tone phones... This is the 90s. Mm. We've had tie-dye waistcoats. It's the 90s. We've had the Prodigy's voodoo people. Mm-hmm. 15 minutes and 37 seconds. Matthew Lillard!
I know. Thank God.
I was like 90s Matthew Lillard. Mm-hmm. Scream.
Yep.
Dead Man's Curve. Wing Commander.
He's giving the performance he gave throughout the 90s,
yeah,
isn't he?
But this
is. I love him beyond the 90s. 13 Ghosts is a brilliant film that we should talk about at some point, but not now.
But he's doing a Matthew Lillard in this, but it feels like in this one it's extreme Matthew Lillard.
He's turned Matthew Lillard up to 11.
Yeah.
Where the minute you meet him, he's selling counterfeit or like illegal compilation tapes.
No, but I think he's like invented Spotify because he's saying, I've made a mixtape and there's a theme and it's artists that
have died on their own asphyxiation on their own vomit.
Yeah.
Which, just as a side thing, when people use the phrase they choked on their own vomit, who else's vomit would anybody choke on? I don't know. Nights get crazy, but that's just such a standard phrase. Not Matthew Lillard's fault. It was a distraction for me, but you have to try really hard to choke on somebody else's vomit. Anyway, he invents Spotify, I think.
Let's talk about his mate, Joey, the 15-year-old Joey.
The kid that smokes constantly.
Throughout
Jesus
the movie.
Christ, it was driving me insane. It's like, can you just stop smoking?
But do you not think... And that, I smoke, and I'm like, kid,
I know,
come on.
Like.
But do you think that's because we're seeing it through a prism of non-smoking now? Where
no.
When you watch that... No, I'm thinking, say, when you watch that in 1995, did you notice it as much? Because it's weird watching people smoke indoors now, isn't it? And he's in that bar, chain smoking.
Yeah.
But they do, everyone is given a trait in this film, or a bunch of traits. His only trait is smoking. He didn't get a bloody name.
Yeah. Smoking and being young. Yep. He gets that.
And the weird thing is they've picked the youngest and freshest faced of them to smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's an unusual choice.
I've got a theory on that. We'll come back to it, but there's a theory building which comes in later. But anyway, so he meets Angelina Jolie.
I like Alex's theories.
It's a strong theory, this one. But there's a bit where we find out, this is because there's a love story that beats at the heart of Hackers between Angelina Jolie and Johnny Lee Miller, both off screen and on. But to talk about the on screen, we realise he's got a crush on her. She's with someone else called Curtis, a phantom freak, one of his friends. They walk out of this bar together and they see Curtis and Angelina Jolie snogging. In a really very...
They're tonguing.
Yeah, because...
I call it tonguing.
Because the sound department...
not moved on from the 90s.
No, the way they're doing it is tonguing.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
I literally have not heard that word for...
Since being at school?
Since 1995. but yet Chris is right, because they actually put the sound...
Oh, stop.
They do.
Oh,
I swear.
So many people have just turned off this bloody podcast. Thanks, Alex.
So Johnny Lee Miller says to Phantom Freak, he goes, who's that? And he goes, that's Curtis. And Johnny Lee Miller goes, so what does he do? And Phantom Freak goes, that's pretty much it. Just looks slick all day. Just so you know, Curtis at this point has badly dyed maroon hair and is wearing a royal blue shell suit. Curtis does not look slick. And then we get on to my favourite scene. The scene, you know, I said at the start where if I'd been 15, I would have loved this movie. This would have been my movie. It's the bit where, as revenge to a prank Angelina Jolie plays earlier, Johnny Lee Miller switches on the school sprinkler system and stands there in the hall with an umbrella as everyone else is getting soaked. I'm like, badass.
But it's not the perfect crime, because if I'm looking for the perpetrator of that crime, it's the bloke with the umbrella up indoors.
And weirdly, all hell breaks loose behind him.
Oh my God, people lose their minds.
It's people dying.
It gets very Lord of the Flies very quickly.
He does that prank because she's done a prank on him, sending him up to an imaginary pool on the roof, which means he gets locked out there.
Yeah, so they have that relationship, don't they, really? It's negging, I guess you'd call it. Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie. So it's the pulling of the hair in the playground. They're both.
Yeah.
I read the game. Okay, so
I read the game. Awful. Yeah. Oh, I'm so embarrassed to say that.
Why? It's not. People think it's a novel. It's not a self-help book.
Is that why you're peacocking now?
What's going on?
Have you ever?
We'll talk about this after. It's too embarrassing.
The Neil Strauss book, The Game, about how men like use certain techniques to appeal to women.
It's him basically explaining how he got Britney Spears. Isn't it?
Did he go out with Britney
Spears? Yeah. And that's how he got to write the book, because it's like, well, look at me and I got Britney Spears.
What, because he tricked her?
That's kind of, honestly, it's kind of what the book is. Yeah. It's awful.
Oh, great.
It's awful.
No, I haven't read
it. It was literally big about 10 years ago. Everyone was reading it.
Not me.
No. Don't think they were allowed to sell it to girls.
Shush, they'll find out what we're up to.
We're back in Cyberdelia for another scene right now. And this is important, because Joey, the smoking kid, in this scene, has a cigarette in each hand, which no one does that. You don't have a cigarette in each hand. It's insane. Unless your movie was funded by money from the tobacco industry.
Which is possible.
That is my theory throughout this. They pick the youngest and the best of us, and they make him smoke with two cigarettes and still look healthy and young.
Yep.
Oh, wow. I mean, there is quite a lot of product placement in this film, so...
Because in this same scene, completely unnecessarily,
yes.
Phantom Freak goes, hey, someone's eaten my fries. And Matthew Lillard goes, who's eating his fries? And holds up the McDonald's fries box to the camera.
With the label facing the camera.
That is bad. However, that is not the weirdest moment in this scene. The weirdest moment in this scene is when Matthew Lillard starts talking about a Gibson computer. Now, this is a fictional computer that the movie is made up, and... apparently, the whole idea of hacking a Gibson has entered hacker lexicon outside this movie because of this. It's like the best computer in the world. He starts talking about it. And as he's talking about it, he pulls back his vest top.
Oh, God, yeah.
I hope I never have to use this. And this is me saying it. I hope I never have to use this word in conjunction with this other word on this podcast ever again. He engages in some serious nipple play. In front of his friends. Yeah. He's sitting with
his friends. I'm worried Alex is going to do it, aren't you?
Don't look at him.
It's forceful nipple play as well.
It's extreme Lillard we're getting here.
Yeah.
This is Lillard turned up to 11.
So in that scene, we've got Coca-Cola, we've got McDonald's, we've got tobacco. This film is basically funded by the unholy trinity of darkness.
The big three.
But that's one of the first times we see all the gang of friends interacting with each other. And you know what? I really like this group.
I do too.
They're really fun. They've all got distinct personalities. Like, I don't think I could pick a favourite of them.
It's very much because Ian Softley, the director, obviously his movie before this was Backbeat.
Which is an amazing film. If you haven't seen Backbeat, run and watch it now.
Fantastic. And I think his whole thing, like naming that computer the Gibson and the way they decorate all their laptops in it, he sees them as a band and the laptops are their musical instruments and the Gibson guitar, the Gibson computer, it all ties in.
Yeah, but... I agree with you about they are like the Beatles. But the Gibson is for William Gibson, no?
Yes, it was named after William Gibson.
Oh, I thought it was Gibson guitar.
But that still works. No, I think that's a good idea.
It's William Gibson. And as they say, it's a supercomputer that
Am I editing this?
What's the Gibson stand for, Alex?
Oh, it's so interesting.
Graham Gibson.
Graham Gibson. It's funny you both say that, because I saw an interview with Ian Softley where he said cyberspace, he thought, was the new rock and roll, and the hackers were a cyber band.
He was wrong about that, but still.
And he saw this as psychedelic movie making, is how he described it.
But I think it looks really cool, almost as cool as Fisher Stevens' entrance in this film, where he skateboards into the big super workstation computer area and utters a line that you are going to hear me saying a lot more. Never fear. I is here.
Oh, I love it.
So when the subject of this film came up last week, you said, is that the film where Fisher Stevens says, and you knew this entrance. You'd not seen the film and you immediately had it up on your phone. Was it like saved to your phone?
I love his entrance. I love him so much in this movie. I think he's the best thing in the movie.
Yes. And it's not even his best line in the film.
No, his best line is, we're samurai, we're keyboard cowboys, we are the people who know, everyone else is cattle. Moo.
Oh, yeah. I was upsetting.
He also says there is no right and wrong, only fun and boring.
Yeah, but that's a recognised philosophical inroad. Yeah,
is it?
Yeah. She's doing philosophy again.
I'm actually with her on this one.
No, it's fine. The only thing about the plague is that he's not much of a threat, is he? Like, they've gone down the cartoon route for the villain rather than... I thought he could have been a bit scary in a couple of points. I think it would have elevated the film. If he had that
scary,
Bond thing, where the Bond villains are fun, but they're also, you know, they're going to do bad things. Whereas this guy...
Lorraine Bracco, his...
That's such a strange... I think she's amazing.
Yeah.
But I do think she might be a little bit miscast in this.
Yeah, like, she's not amazing in this.
No, she's not. And also, like, the reason that you don't really believe in him is like their relationship makes it even more cartoony because they're on the escalators in a very public place having a conversation about this secret plan at the top of their voices.
Yeah.
Like, she's going, we're going to steal 25 million!
And also, you're going to see each other later.
His great other line, Fisher Stevens, I'm going to be doing a lot of Fisher Stevens lines, is where the agent gives him a file and he goes, ugh, hard copy.
Yeah, that was brilliant!
Well, you mentioned the plot, so should we get into what his villainous plan is?
I didn't get it. I really lost.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to find out about it, I recommend watching Superman 3 because it's the plot. It's the plot that Richard Pryor is putting into action in Superman 3.
I would rather you just told me than me have to watch Superman 3 again.
Well, as you say, the cover is he's creating this ecological disaster, but it's really a cover for what he's doing. He's created a worm that's eating small amounts of money. This is a plot that's been used several times. So these little bits of money that he's stealing from all over the place has actually totaled 21 million at this point in the film. So
what he should do is get in touch with the tobacco industry, funding all sorts of stuff.
Offer to make a movie.
There's a moment where Fisher Stevens is smoking and Lorraine Bracco is standing next to him and they're having a chat and he zips her up and you suddenly realise it's a romantic relationship and he's smoking and she wafts the cigarette smoke out of her face and it cuts so abruptly at that point. Like, they're like, no, smoking's not bad. Smoking's fine. People love smoke in their face. Tobacco money funded this movie. So as it goes on, like you say, there is this plot. And as it turns out, Fisher Stevens is trying to frame them for it, which means that Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie have to form an alliance and they start becoming friends.
The pair of them bond over what is my favourite scene in the film, which is the prank wars.
Oh, that's good.
That they go to town on Agent Dick Gill, a.k.a. Bunk from The Wire.
Yeah.
He's on their tail. He's corrupt, isn't he? He's kind of...
No!
Isn't he? I thought he was in cahoots with... No,
he's trying to do the right thing. He's woefully underprepared for someone who's dealing with hackers. He's like, what? My identity's being messed around with? I can't believe it.
Like, when he's in the restaurant and they wipe his credit card.
Yeah.
And I know it's a montage, so it has to be quick, but the waiter tries it once.
Yeah!
Like, then literally walks over to him, doesn't say anything, and cuts it in half in front of him.
Yeah,
is that what you do?
Well, there used to be, there was a thing that said it wasn't that it was declined, it's that it was stolen and you had to cut up, I've done it to someone, you had to cut up their card in front of them.
Really?
Yeah, honestly. It said it was stolen, so you cut it up.
So what happened?
What do you mean?
Like, what did they do?
They ran away.
Did you have to call the police?
No, you just cut it up and then tell your manager and then go home.
So you didn't chase them?
No! No, I didn't chase. I was once told when I was working in a shop that if someone stole something, I was supposed to chase after them. And I was stood there and I would watch people lifting in front of me and just walking out the door. It's like, there's absolutely no way that I'm running after that person.
I once got my mobile phone stolen on Shaftesbury Avenue.
Yeah.
And the kid ran off. He was about sort of 16 and I was about 20. And he stole it. And I chased him. And I turned a corner. And it was a dead end. And he reached the end and started walking back towards me. At which point I realised, what was
away.
I thinking
yeah.
I was going to do? Do you know what I did? I bought it back off him for 40 quid there and then.
No way.
Oh my God.
And just went, 40 quid for my phone? Yeah. He was like, yeah, all right. Shall we get back to this?
I would like to talk about Angelina Jolie's red eyeshadow. Because I have seen this film before, but rewatching it, I had a recovered memory. Which I'd completely scotched, which is I wore red eyeshadow for quite a long time after watching this film in the mid-90s.
Did you notice red eyeshadow?
No, I was looking at her lips.
Her lips,
I
think that's fair to say.
No, that's fair.
They are incredible lips.
Well, it was the first time we'd all properly seen, although you didn't see this film, it was the first time I saw her in a film, and it's like, what is this? Who's made this?
Who's made this
and
woman?
It turns out it was John Voight, weirdly. That was confusing. You know. And she's very good in this film as well. I think you can tell she's going to be the star. She's got this effortless cool and charisma.
Do you know, there's a perfect moment which encapsulates that, which is towards the end where they've come up with a plan, or she's come up with a plan to actually stop them being framed by the plague. And they're on the train and she literally says, "I have a plan," and then grabs her rollerblades. Mm. And in that moment, for the briefest moment, it actually makes having a pair of rollerblades look cool. And then immediately afterwards, you can see the look on her face is more like, shit.
Why have I brought these? I'm
actually going to go on foot. Does anyone have a carrier bag?
They're really heavy.
Is there somewhere I could sit to change?
Because they go and see... they go to a Razor and Blade, those two guys who are DJing, and the actual venue they film that at is the Ministry of Sound.
Is that true?
Yes, yeah, Elephant
Love
and Castle.
That fact.
I've stood on that stage and DJed there.
Did you DJ the Ministry of Sound? So to shriek, I just don't believe you.
Yeah, they filmed it all in London, pretty much, apart from obviously the exteriors. Like, it was an abandoned swimming pool they built the club in.
Oh, not the Ministry of Sound.
No, Cyberdelia. Cyberdelia, right, yeah, that's right. An abandoned swimming pool somewhere in London that they built.
Yeah, okay.
Bit of trivia. So, yeah, the plan is hackers of the world unite. There's hackers all over the world getting involved, including
yeah!
an amazing cameo.
Yeah.
Do you want to say who it is, Vicky? Do you not know the cameo?
I don't.
All right,
let's
test Alex. So, there's a bloke in London on his laptop hacking, and he's in front of London Bridge. That's why we know he's in London. Did you recognise that man?
No.
It's David A. Stewart of the Eurythmics.
Yeah, it really is. Isn't that weird?
It's Dave Stewart.
It's so strange.
It's a really funny little cameo.
Do you know why I was preoccupied at that point? Was because all the phone boxes they were working from started rotating 360.
I thought that was awesome. Visually that looked really cool.
It did, but I mean, it must have made it hard to type. Can we talk about the creepy Da Vinci virus? You know the thing.
Oh, yeah.
I am the Da Vinci virus. At the
better or worse than Mozart's ghost? Just to bring it back.
Moonchurch Goose! The Da Vinci virus, it seems to become sentient at the very end.
Yeah, it does. He's like, don't kill me!
Yeah, that bit really upset me where they wipe it out and it goes, help me! Then there's another bit where Matthew Lillard, this is the climax now, they've kind of sorted it all out, but they've been arrested in the process, and Matthew Lillard appears on TVs all over the world.
So ridiculous.
Matthew Lillard. Now, previously... Agent Gill has captured Johnny Lee Miller and saying again weird things that I think people thought people said in the 90s. Once again, he's like, I'm going to flush your ass.
Oh, yeah.
Which no one ever said in the 90s or has said since, really.
Ever.
It sounds like a medical procedure. Ooh. Anyway, Matthew Lillard appears on the screen and starts going, this is what actually happened. I'm Matthew Lillard. And everyone goes... Okay.
Yep, you can go. Yep.
That's it.
It's ridiculous.
It's sorted out.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Matthew Lillard. He's like, shucks, you better go.
The craziest person of the lot on the telly.
Yeah.
Agent Gill actually sees him speaking and goes, Damn it!
But I like it. This film just keeps pushing incredulity, doesn't it? Like, it starts off extreme and just keeps going and going and going. And I felt like I was with it. It's like a tidal wave of nonsense that you just get washed away by.
They had a website for this movie, which apparently got hacked. The website itself was hacked by real-life hackers unhappy at how they were going to be portrayed in this movie, and that it was just a Hollywood money-making machine. So the movie website said this is going to be a fun, exciting promotional site for a movie. They then hacked it, graffitied over Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie's faces and wrote, this is going to be a lame, cheesy promotional site for a movie. No one to this day is sure whether that was a very clever marketing campaign for the movie or if it genuinely was hacked. My feeling is it's fake because no movie site would ever start with, this is going to be a fun, exciting promotional site for a movie.
Well, can I add an addendum to that? Mm. Because what I read, and I'm just going to quote it directly, this bit of trivia, we're back on trivia.
Good.
Around the movie's release, the official website was modified by its webmasters to appear that it had been hacked into, and digital graffiti with instructions to see the net instead were added to the site's graphics.
Oh, cool.
Which would be a very funny, cool thing to do. Again, but not very believable that a film studio, even as a joke, would tell you to go and see the other film that year that's got the same theme.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm so hot. I was just thinking about it. I wasn't trying to be funny. I was thinking it through.
I'm starting to worry that your brain has got so hot that you're taking 3 seconds longer than normal to process every new piece
Listen
of information.
Listen to what's in my brain. Will someone get me an Aperol spritz before I fucking die?
All right. Okay, cool. Well, let's wrap this up. Is there something you want to say before?
Well, I would like to say about, we've talked about the music.
Can I just interrupt very quickly? Mm-hmm. Understand that this better be fucking good, because she needs Aperol spritz and everything that isn't in this fucking furnace.
That is a lot of pressure you're putting me under.
I'm just saying, make this fact very good.
Oh, shit. I've got two facts. Which one do I go for?
I don't know, but you can only
one. Do you want to? I'm going to
just give me the subheading for both, and I'll tell you which.
Soundtrack is just a conversation. Toothbrush.
Yeah, do toothbrush.
Do you want to know why he's got a toothbrush for the whole film?
Yes, please.
It's because he's from a broken home and doesn't know where he'll be sleeping each night. So that's why he's got the toothbrush
with
him.
Okay, that's nice.
This is Matthew Lillard.
Yes.
And the other bit, I was going to say, this film had two sequels.
What?
But they were soundtracks. So it spawned, there were three Hackers, this was such a hit, this soundtrack, that they did a Hackers 2 and a Hackers 3, music from and inspired by the film. But this launched Prodigy, Massive Attack, Orbital, Left Field, Underworld, Stereo MCs, Elastica. So many bands got launched in America off the back of this. These bands were sort of known in England.
Really?
Yeah.
This cost exactly the same as the Net, 20 million, while the Net made over 100 million. This made 7.5 million.
Did it?
Yeah, it was a big flop.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I know. And critics and audiences did not like it.
Which is weird, because it's actually not bad at all. And like I said, I would have loved this at 15.
But a cult has built up around it. It still gets screened all the time, all over the world. They've had re-releases on DVD, special editions on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a film that has had a life in a way that The Net has not.
When they had their 20th anniversary in 2015, they had screenings in LA that Matthew Lillard introduced, and Johnny Lee Miller and Ian Softley, the director, did them in London. So yeah, it has become a genuine... I know that phrase is bandied about, but it is a genuine cult classic.
Yep.
Okay. So. 5-star review and 1-star review. My 5-star review, 5 stars. This is a blast. Great music, terrible clothes, awful attitudes. I watched it twice in the same week.
Fine.
1-star review, however, and I think you're going to love this one. Purchased on a VHS tape in 2000, by the way. That's when this review comes from.
Okay.
This has to be the worst video on earth. If only hacking was this easy. Save your money and buy The Net instead.
Definitely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so having watched Hackers, having watched The Net, having talked about them both at length, and how different the hacking is in each film, like the difference between the two is unbelievable if you think about it. Angela Bennett's out there doing what I think is quite... what I believe, because obviously I've got no idea, is quite realistic hacking versus towering infernos of electricity and maths equations and God knows what else in Hackers, which is much more fun to look at, but unrealistic.
I feel like she's trying to sway us in a certain direction here. I feel like there's some mind games happening.
So, which of the two do you think is the better film? Chris?
So my memory of the two films, which because I watched them both in 1995, was The Net was by far the better film. But having rewatched them this week, I am completely changing my opinion. I think Hackers is by far the better film. I found it hugely entertaining. I think it's a fascinating time capsule of a time. They get so much wrong, but that's what makes it so interesting. I think it's a film that truly commits. You know, from Matthew Lillard's performance to the clothes, to the visuals, to the incredible soundtrack. I just feel like it's a film that's trying harder. And for that reason, Hackers gets my vote.
Fine.
She glared at me. I got glare.
No, I thought really valid points. Yeah. So, Alex, just before you agree with... No, I'm kidding. What is your own independent decision?
So it's really difficult for Kerry, because you have to understand, I've seen The Net so many times, but I had to watch it for research purposes yesterday, and I felt like it was a chore. Whereas I watched Hackers for the first time yesterday, for the first time, and I felt like a kid again, and I wanted it to be 1995, and I was full of like nostalgia and the music, and it made me like... want to be young, and I was looking at the 90s through these rose-tinted glasses and thinking, God, want to be
15. I want it to be 1995, and that's why I'm picking the net. Because that made me feel sick. I don't want to remember things like that.
God, who does? Fair enough. Are you being serious?
Yeah.
Yay! I will address my own bias. If Sandra Bullock wasn't in The Net, I think Hackers would be the better film, but she is, and so I choose The Net.
Yeah, let's have The Net as the winner. I mean, I'm really on the fence. I really loved Hackers so much, and I wanted to pick Hackers, but, you know, it made me want to be young again, and I can't have that in my life. I just can't have that in my life.
Do not push on that door. Fair enough.
Thank you.
All right, the way he dresses. He's trying to be bloody 15 again. Load of nonsense.
Skinny jeans was the wrong call for this room.
You must be dying.
I'm so hot.
I'm going to peel Alex off the chair.
All right, so whose choice is it next week?
Alex Zane, I believe it's your choice next week.
It is my choice next week, so I'm not going to give you the connection. That will be revealed next week. I'm going to announce the films. Before I do, if you want to get in touch with us and have an opinion on the films we talked about this week or the films I'm about to announce and maybe have a guess at what the connection might be, the details are, Chris?
You can email us at clashofthetitles@gmail.com. That's clashofthetitles@gmail.com. Or hit us up on Twitter @ClashPod.
Lovely stuff. So my movies for next week are... All right, so the two movies that I'm picking for next week's show, you can have one of them each, are the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Street Fighter.
Okay.
And Paul W.S. Anderson's Mortal Kombat.
I'm going to say now I think I can guess the connection already, but that's fine. That's fine. We'll play the game.
I'm keeping it simple. Keeping it simple.
I like it.
So do either of you have a preference for which you get?
No.
I would like Street Fighter if I could.
Chris, you get Street Fighter. Vicky, you are... playing Mortal Kombat.
Very happy to do so.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye for now.
This show is part of the Radio Stakhanov Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.